From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. We're going to hear now about steel, or more precisely, about the legacy of steel here in the U.S. Gary, Indiana, once a thriving steel town, is still a steel town, but it's hardly thriving, and we'll hear more on Gary in a moment. First, to Pittsburgh, the place that some still call the Steel City, has reinvented itself. Its unemployment rate is nearly 2% better than the national average. Plus, it's home to 1,600 technology companies and a growing population. Dan Bobkoff of the Midwest Public Radio Collaborative Changing Gears walks us through just how Pittsburgh transformed itself.
The first thing you should know about Pittsburgh is it's serious about its football.
Anybody selling tickets?
Cleveland sucks!
On game days, it's like the whole city piles into parking lots near Heinz Field. Fans wear the Steelers logo, still based on the mark of the steel industry. But you don't hear much about steel when you talk to tailgaters.
All of our jobs are on the rise.
Yes, Pittsburgh's economy is booming.
Pittsburgh is probably one of the most livable cities around.
Meds and eds. That's the new manufacturing. Medicine and education.
That's Melissa Zabella, Kevin Clark, Dawn Bourne, and Anthony Neff. Pittsburgh has come a long way from the early post-war years when it produced half the country's steel and a lot of its soot. Joel Tarr teaches at Carnegie Mellon University.
It was so bad that you had to have the streetlights turned on at noon in downtown Pittsburgh a number of days during the winter and the fall.
That was no way to live, and the city's future was as murky as the pollution gripping it. But in this period, a surprising coalition formed to clean things up. Leaders from business, universities, nonprofits, and government joined together to create smoke controls and clean water rules. Even so, when Steve Lee came to Pittsburgh in the early 70s to go to Carnegie Mellon, steel production was still taking a toll.
And I'd come to school at the end of summer vacation, and for 2 weeks my eyes would run, I'd have a sore throat just from all the junk that was in the air.
Lee eventually became enamored with this steel town. Today, he's the head of that architecture department where he was once a student, and he remembers those late nights studying in the 70s when he'd look out his window.
The sky was just throbbing in red as the open hearth furnaces were being stoked, and this is an amazing place. But I was very young. I didn't realize we were at a moment of an huge transformation.
Now, U.S. Steel, for its part, says it will go ahead with plans to shut that mill on April the 1st. 790 people will lose their jobs.
By the early 80s, the steel era came to an abrupt end. This was not some long, drawn-out decline like the auto industry. Virtually overnight, 150,000 manufacturing jobs were wiped out. Many blamed deregulation and foreign competition.
The closing of the mill hits much more than just the 1,200 workers inside.
I never have ever badmouthed U.S. Steel. They paid me for every minute I worked.
Colin McNeely was one of those forced to reinvent himself.
I know a lot of people today take the position that they weren't treated right. Well, suck it up and move on. That's what you have to do.
McNeely went to college and law school in his 40s. Education played a role in the city's reinvention, too. Carnegie Mellon and the University of Pittsburgh became powerhouses in computing, robotics, and biotechnology. Companies were spun off, and as Steve Lee shows me on a driving tour, these sectors started replacing steel.
There's Sunoco Aristech Research Facility.
A former mill on the river is now a bustling technology park. In recent years, that coalition of groups that helped clean up Pittsburgh in the 50s used those established relationships to make projects like this happen.
So the building site is fully occupied.
Of course, not everyone has benefited from Pittsburgh's turnaround. There are still poor neighborhoods and racial divisions. But it's a long way from the general despair of the 80s. Today, no one thing dominates Pittsburgh's economy. At a church turned into a brew pub, you now find people like Rob Meyer, who started a company that will text your cell phone when a table is ready at a restaurant. Meyer is from San Francisco, but stayed in Pittsburgh after attending Carnegie Mellon.
But I kind of started liking Pittsburgh. It has a small town feel, but it's kind of a big city. And I thought it was actually a really good place to start a technology business.
One quick announcement before we get started.
This transformation is still very new, as White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs learned as he announced Pittsburgh as the site of last year's G20 summit. It was a time to showcase the city's progress to the world. But he couldn't get any respect for the place.
In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Get a little murmur there.
But Pittsburgh residents aren't laughing. There's a strong proactive movement there. This is a city that doesn't wait for things to happen anymore. And that's why other cities trying to emerge from their industrial past now look to Pittsburgh with envy. For NPR News, I'm Dan Bobkoff.